This is Electric Sisterhood, podcast episode number 250. Who was right?
You were right.
Electric Sisterhood, home of the best.
The fucking best.
Girl gaming tech gadget and anime podcast. I'm Ninja Sister.
And I'm Pandalicious.
And welcome to another episode of our podcast. We are in recovery mode, people.
Oh, God.
E3 2011. It's in the books.
It's in the can.
We did it. We triumphed. We walked through stuff. We hands-on making with stuff. And, you know, there was maybe a party or two. Okay. One in particular. But we're not going to talk about that. We are going to talk about the event itself. Things that we saw. What's sticking out in our memories right this minute as well. So if you were wondering what we were up to, because we were all over the place and tweeting the hell out of it, and we've got an amazing amount of stuff that we're going to be sharing with you over the next couple of weeks as we dig through our PR kits and remember that which we are not remembering right now. You want to make sure that you hit us up on our website, electricsisterhood.com, to check it all out. You can comment on those things and share with us. We actually do answer them back. The comment system is back now using Facebook, so you can just log in with your Facebook account. You don't have to make an account anymore on our website to do it, and boom de bam de bim de bim. You're interacting. We do it for the children's. We do it for you because we hurt you. But let's talk about E3 2011. Yeah. First of all, for so many community sites that weren't able to get in, there was still a shit ton of people at the event.
Now, were there more people at PAX East than E3?
According to official numbers, yeah, because the PAX East numbers were like 62,000 or something like that. In attendance, and the numbers for E3, the official ones from the ESA group, said that there were 42,800 some odd people. So there are definitely more people at PAX East, which makes sense because PAX East is open to the public, where, you know, E3 is not. They're more
exclusive. But we had so many professionals in the industry in one place.
We did. We had a lot of the pros in the industry in the same place, but a lot of community representation wasn't there. You know, it was the one thing that I noticed. It was a lot of industry attendees, you know, people affiliated, buyers and things like that. Like, I ran into some people who were buyers for Costco while heading to the Sony thing. And they were all really cool, and we ended up talking on the bus ride over, which was nice. But there wasn't a lot of community stuff. There were a few games from people from All Games. You know, we ran into the DCD, which is always fun. Alon from Chatterbox. And yes. The Golgatron crew was there, which was cool to meet them and be able to put faces to their names and stuff like that. We ran into the XBLA fans,
yep,
who we absolutely love.
Shout out.
Shouts out. I'm letting you know there's going to be a lot of shout outs on the show for at least the next month, because we ran into a bunch of the community people. We ran into, you know, Crix Lee from Girl Gamer for like 20 seconds. We saw Jess V, who's always, you know, lovely to run into and things like that.
And don't forget Rachel. We saw Rachel,
and it's always nice to run into her and, you know, the crew from Fantastic Forum. And so
See, I only saw Mayer and Oscar. I didn't see Moses.
What are you going to do? I mean, you
know, I didn't get the collector set this year.
He's a mover and a shaker. I completed the set. I totally completed the set.
I did not complete my set.
You know, we ran into Coin Op Rob.
Yeah, and we totally, like, partied up with B-Wolf.
Yep, you know, and it's
and
always,
Shadow Next
and
Gen.
Shadow Next Gen. You know, so there was, you know, community there, which was cool.
And then we saw Derek.
Oh, Derek H. I know, on the last day, literally 20 minutes before we were heading to the airport.
I know.
Well, I saw him at Sony, but
I know, but I didn't. And I was like,
yeah, but you ran into Crop at Microsoft.
I had breakfast with Kraut before we even got on the bus.
This is what I'm saying. And, of course, you know, Gamer Edie from Game Hounds was there for a couple of days. It was really cool. But, you know, not everybody that, you know, we talked about was able to get into a lot of the events. It was really difficult for us to all kind of meet up and do the mind share, so we weren't able to do our round table.
I know.
But we did see a lot of people, and we did see a lot of stuff. So I'm going to kick it off. Because I've got some stuff that's just burning a hole in my brain.
Then let it out so it can stop burning a hole in your brain.
It's not going to stop burning. It's just going to kind of go to simmer. All
right, basically. Well, get it to the simmer, bitch. But get it to the simmer.
We spent a lot of time checking out stuff. It was really nice because even though there were some long lines for some things, and one of the ones that you're going to talk about definitely had, like, the longest line.
Oh, confirmed. That or the lines for Skyrim.
Yeah,
Skyrim
was
pretty long line.
It was ridiculous.
Yeah.
But I got to say that, you know, I spent a lot of time with Ubisoft, and I spent a lot of time with Activision, which, by the way, I got to thank both of them because they were amazing in giving me some extra time to really see everything that I wanted to see and get hands-on with it and really know how to treat a chick well. I also got to spend some time with the crew at DTP and take a look at Awesome Knots, which I'm going to talk about a little bit later on. But I'm going to kick it off right now with Modern Warfare 3. And
really?
Yeah, I am.
Wait, you're going to totally go like the Microsoft presser and start with Modern Warfare 3?
I'm going to start with Modern Warfare 3. Yeah. Dude, Sony started with Uncharted 3, which...
I know.
Awesome.
Why didn't they start with Catherine?
I think you just answered your own question. Catherine looks great, but how do you explain Catherine? Okay, it's a new IP, okay? So there's a lot of backstory that you'd have to talk to. If you're kicking off a media event and you dim the lights and you see the image of Catherine...
Yeah, but if you go with your...
Or Nathan Drake, what do you want to see first? I want to see Nathan Drake. I've been dying to see Nathan Drake, and fucking Naughty Dog is the shit. So
I'm not saying nothing bad about Naughty Dog, and I'm not saying anything bad about Modern Warfare because I own both games, both consoles. So you don't have to drill it to me. My only thing is, why not keep your heavy hitters for your impactful finale?
Just like with the finale, everybody just wants to eat and drink.
Not even, because at the Microsoft presser, when they flashed Halo 4, people went batshit crazy. And they didn't even hint at it. And that's one of their top-selling games on that console.
I know, but guess what? Halo 4 is not going to be for a while. So, like, hey, it's just like Sony did a couple of years ago with freaking Last Guardian. And everyone's been, like, peeing their pants waiting for the next thing about Last Guardian. Nothing. Okay? The last year, they closed it out with Metal Gear. This year, they're like, yeah, we got nothing to say about Metal Gear. Move along. Don't see anything. So, Sony literally left with the big dick. Like, look at my penis. Because... the next 15 minutes, we're so sorry. We're so sorry about what happened with the hack.
We're sorry.
Jack Trent was like, I'm sorry. I'm sorry for everyone at Sony. I'm sorry for everyone that's, you know, on the PSN. It's back and it's up and running-ish. And I'm sorry. And we're sorry. And, you know, we don't want to cause anybody any problems. And, oh, by the way, we're sorry. And I don't know if you heard, but I'm actually personally sorry.
Look, I'm giving everybody a complimentary game sorry because that's how sorry I am.
Exactly. So Sony had to lead off with Uncharted. They had to, because it's exclusive to them. They couldn't lead off with BioShock Infinite, because it's for everyone.
Cross-platform,
yeah. So, you know, they had to lead off with their exclusive thing, which was awesome, okay? While Gears exists, and Gears is awesome, okay? And Gears 3 look great. We'll talk about that, too, okay? It makes sense for me that Microsoft would lead off with Modern Warfare 3, because it was the thing that was so up in the air with all the stuff going on with the Infinity Ward people and Respawn and then EA maybe getting their act together or not, that to be able to lead off with Modern Warfare 3 looking like it looks, that was a smart play for Microsoft. And then, you know, going into their thing, which is exclusive and pretty much killing it right now, which is the Kinect stuff and the deeper things with Kinect, which I know you're going to talk about with, especially with, you know, Mass Effect 3.
Mm-hmm.
But for me, I want to lead off with Modern Warfare 3 because, you know, I spent a lot of time with shooters this year. I tried to go out of my comfort zone because everyone knows that I'm a rhythm game girl. Like, rhythm and action, I'm cool with, especially third-person action.
I'm very surprised that you weren't, like, plotting a tent in front of the Dance Central tube.
I thought about doing it, but I was like, you know, that's the easy play for me. We've got some friends at Harmonix. We'll definitely be talking with them throughout the year about Dance Central 2 leading up to its release. But I really wanted to spend some time with some things that I, you know, normally would not go out of my way to see, because I'm trying to, you know, deepen my gamer...
Your gamer well.
My gamer queue, if you will.
Right.
So I specifically set myself up to look at shooters first, action games second, family games third, and then depending upon if I had time, my passion, which is the rhythm games. You know, so I ended up actually only checking out Just Dance 3 and a little bit of Dance Central 2 on my last day. My first day, I tried to kill it with the action stuff and shooters. And so my first stop of the day was actually with Ghost Recon, which I'm going to talk about Future Soldier in a minute.
Ubisoft!
But I really wanted to jump in with Modern Warfare 3 because it's going to be big. Okay, let's just all accept that now. It's going to be big, but it's Modern Warfare 2 taken to another level. So it
we're does, getting wet, bitches.
Well, I mean, the two levels that I got to see were an extraction, not an extraction, but a chase mission in London, and then we got to see a submarine breach, which you take part in, which is going to be a big campaign. And the first thing that hit me when being taken through the guided demo was that, okay, wow, this looks great. The graphics look a little bit tweaked up from Modern Warfare 2, which looked really realistic. I mean, we talked about the snow mission a bunch, you and I, but it didn't look or play any different than any other Modern Warfare game, which I think with all the turmoil that was going on with EA and the shifting of people and things happening at Infinity Ward or not happening with the dev group, to be able to see the game and see that nothing really changed as far as the mechanic. Like,
so no, even with all that drama, the fact that the game still looks and feels like
it is a Modern Warfare game, which I think is a huge accomplishment, especially when you've got a game that you have two different developers co-developing, you know, because they needed the support. There are lots of things that can go wrong. Lots of feeling in the game that you're used to that may shift because they don't have the ability to deliver on it, or it's not delivered in the way that you knew, but it's Modern Warfare.
Okay.
Okay. And so I think that that's a huge accomplishment, you know, because when you work with two different or three different houses on a single game, there are lots of things that can get lost in translation, or, you know, things that are fan favorites or fan service that just doesn't get paid attention to with the same kind of care because it's not one development.
It's not detrimental baby to your gaming experience.
Right. And it's Modern Warfare. Like, the first mission where you're breaching the submarine, motherfucker, you're breaching this a freaking sub. So you start off on a personal sub craft thing, you know, the little jet
yep
pack.
Boop, boop.
Yep.
Boop.
And, yeah. And you're literally, like, going through, it's almost like a race in, like, the racing water game that you and I used to love, the jet ski one on the Nintendo.
Wave Race.
Yeah, yeah. 64. So you're literally like,
I going love that under game. Things. Why haven't they brought that back?
I have no idea. But you literally are running through, I should say, propelling through the seascape. You're in a pack of about 8 people, and you've got to follow your team leader. And there are places where you have to stop. There are mines that you have to avoid. The HUD pops up and actually shows you when you're getting close to the mines that are being laid by this sub so that you don't, you know, set one off and blow yourself up, kill yourself, or alert
yeah,
them.
Yeah, I know.
Present.
They showed that as the scene. That's the cutscenes and stuff, the playthrough that we saw at the presser.
Yeah, yeah. So that's what we got treated to. And then literally got to watch, you know, the process of, you know, dropping mines, basically bombs, onto the submarine to get them to surface, then breaching the sub and running through it. And, you know, it looked great. It ran flawlessly. You know, there were no hiccups, which are always, you know, good to see in any kind of demo that you're running through, because even though it's still early in the development, you know, the game's not shipping yet.
Right.
You never like to see hiccups in the demo, because that means that there are bugs that they still themselves haven't found because they weren't able to weed them out in their own demonstration. All the demos are being run on dev kits. Which is always cool to see an Xbox 360 dev kit, because it looks like, you know, like a matte finished version of the Xbox 360 Slim, but you can tell it's a little beefy, and I just wanted to be like, yeah, can I just take that, like, back with me? Like, that would be, like, the best swag ever, but it ran well. It looks phenomenal. I think that the multiplayer piece of it is going to be very strong, just as strong as existing multiplayers, which is cool. But for me, it was just really kind of a relief to see, okay, it's going to be just like Modern Warfare 2. Like, the kids are okay, even though mom and dad have broken up. Like, the kids are still well-balanced and things like that. So that was a breathe moment for me, because I was nervous, you know. I played Modern Warfare 1, and really, Modern Warfare are the only pieces of the Call of Duty world that I typically play. I picked up Black Ops and started the single-player campaign on it, but I haven't finished it. And it's good, but I'm really, like, ready to get my hands on Modern Warfare 3.
Like, it sounds like you've pretty much already had all the experience that you want to get from Black Ops, the fact that you're...
And I haven't really gotten through it. And so I don't know if it's just...
You might just be a fan of Infinity Ward, period. Because remember, Black Ops was done by Treyarch, so that's the other.
And Treyarch did a really good job on it. I mean, it's very inviting as far as, you know, how you start off with the character there. But I think that as far as the Call of Duty world goes, I'm just a Modern Warfare kind of girl. Like, I like the bouncing between different stories.
Right.
You know, pieces where I'm not necessarily one person playing through, and there's some of that in Black Ops, you know, especially like the part where you sat down with Bobby Kennedy, who wasn't Bobby Kennedy, but was Bobby Kennedy, but whatever, you know, the president.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, like, that was really cool for me, but I'm definitely, you know, a Modern Warfare kind of girl when it comes to the Call of Duty universe, so I'm ready for Modern Warfare 3. Like, I almost popped in my Modern Warfare 2 to my PS3 before going out to E3, because I'm like, okay, I need to play a shooter, and, you know, I'm nowhere near progress really in Black Ops, and so I almost popped it back in. But I'm ready for Modern Warfare 3. I think that it's going to do really well, and I think that it's a huge accomplishment for Activision having, you know, two different developers working on it to deliver a very, very good experience, similar to an experience that you've already had in a franchise, because there's nothing that bothers me more with a franchise when they decide to take it in a completely different direction because they're working with a new developer and it loses some of that thing.
Credibility?
Not credibility, but it loses that one thing that endeared it to me to begin with.
Okay.
You know, like the Mortal Kombat game, okay, the one with the nice controller that I've got. Like, it plays like a Mortal Kombat, but there's something missing, and I can't quite put my finger on it.
I haven't played it, so I couldn't tell you if it's something
but
I pick up on.
But there's something in the experience that's missing, and it's not the bloodiness, and it's not the tongue-in-cheekness, because some of that is definitely there, but there's something that the Warner Group has brought into it. And I can't quite put my finger on it, but it's not exactly a Mortal Kombat experience for me, which is why it's like I enjoy it and I enjoy the fight stick, but it's not my go-to fighter. Like, I still roll back to Soul Calibur as my go-to fighter.
Really?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Because it's not DOA. Like, I lost interest in DOA.
No, and I was surprised that you didn't go back to Super Street Fighter or Street
Well,
Fighter
that's because 4. I'm really... I like the art style of Super Street Fighter.
You might as well get used to it.
But I don't have Super Street Fighter. I just have Street Fighter 4.
Yeah,
I didn't
so
get the
I.
Super Edition.
Yeah, I mean...
And I think I probably... It would be my go-to if I had Super.
Why not just trade your regular Street Fighter
I
4
might,
for Super?
But at the same time, you know, now that we spent time at Capcom, now I'm looking at Street Fighter X Tekken, and I'm like, that might be it.
Yeah, that might be it.
You know, so that was my first thing that was kind of like, okay, I have my aha moment, I can breathe, Modern Warfare is not going to be, 3 is not going to be different than the other Modern Warfare games, so I'll end up picking it up and playing the hell out of it, for sure. For sure, for sure. And then, you know, I spent time playing Ghost Recon because, you know, I love the Tom Clancy games. And I love Splinter Cell, too. But Future Soldier, and I almost messed that up.
I probably will when I start talking
about it. Future Soldier It fucking feels great. It feels great. I got to talk with one of the lead developers from the Bucharest team who worked on the game. And I got to play through the level that they showed off during their media briefing.
Right.
Where we were doing the extraction. And I had to say, there are mechanics in there that definitely make it a much more enjoyable experience for the single player for me than the multiplayer. I did spend some time with multiplayer, and it's cool.
Did you get to spend any time with the gunsmith ability that they're going to put?
They didn't let you play with gunsmith. They walked you through it.
Okay.
Because
I'm very curious about that, because we already know that I really like my Kinect, and I like the idea that we're getting some titles with enhancement via Kinect this year, which is what they were showcasing. So I was actually kind of curious, because they were showing live demos of it.
Yeah.
But
I was wondering if they only showed the live demo. You couldn't play with it because they didn't have any Kinects out on the floor for a future shoulder. So they talked through it.
Okay.
And showed you, you know, basically, I imagine it's probably the video that they took from the media briefing of what you saw of Gunsmith. It's strong. I like, very much like you brought up, the ability to actually really kind of craft my gun from the inside out.
Literally from the inside out. Like, there is not one part of your gun that you don't have access to upgrade or beef up.
And I think that that's really cool. I think that one theme that I saw a lot at E3 was that the developers get that customization and personalization is key for your, I'm going to say, mid-level gamer again, the person that's a little bit more than a casual gamer, but not necessarily hardcore. That it's key. You know, the ability to, in, for instance, the fighter game that they were showing off on the 3DS at Nintendo, to be able, for the Street Fighter X Tekken, where you could actually, you know, craft the outfit for your character and draw on their faces and fight that way and, you know, design graphics for their clothing and really tweak what they look like.
Right.
You know,
make them more personal to you.
Exactly. That deep character creation and customization is important. And I think even more so in your fighting games where, let's face it, you're pretty much very limited. Like, you don't have an open world environment in many FPSs, which is probably for the best because you get lost and spend way too much time, you know, shooting random shit.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, I'd shoot all the windows out of a building if I, you know, could just waste time. Oh my god,
if I wasn't worried about people shooting me in the back of the head, I would knock over trash cans. I would blow up cars. I would, yeah.
You know, so
I'd flip every table over in a bistro.
So in order to kind of give you that other piece, and I'm going to say not simulated depth, but additional or value-added depth, the ability to really custom create your weapons, I think is going to be very, very popular.
I'd like to see them really reach out to their community with that when it does go and release. Because like I said, you can customize. There are so many different types of guns. There's so many different combinations.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to see them maybe do some type of, you know, sweepstakes where you customize.
Right, and people vote on the guns that are created by the community. Like, that would be really cool.
Yeah, and then make that, like, I don't know, whoever wins, obviously, you know,
you know, they get something, but maybe that weapon becomes, like, free for everybody.
Yeah.
You know, that they get.
That would be pretty interesting.
You know, and it's named after the person.
The Pandanator for close combat, which is really funny because I'm really scared of close combat, but I want a close combat gun.
Well, I have to say, though, for Ghost Recon, you know, the playthrough, it's very comfortable. So one of the mechanics that I really like is, you know, with your Ghost team, you have the coordinated kills.
Yep.
Which is really important.
I really thought of, what was the game for that? I think it was from Splinter Cell Conviction, where you could set markers.
Yeah, where you could mark, and then you could, like, bing, 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 bing. Yeah, it definitely feels like that when you're playing
it. When I saw it, I was like, oh, because it's a very Splinter Cell Conviction.
Yeah, it's a very, very similar thing. So you set marks, you can set up to 4 marks, because that's how many members you have on your team. And then what you have to do is you have to target your mark that you're going to hit, and then as soon as you're in the optimal range, you'll get a blue light from your character to your target. Once everyone in your team, their light shows up, as soon as you tap the trigger button to actually shoot, your entire team shoots and they take down their marks. You can also use the AR drone, which makes a presence, again, it's felt in the game, to actually fly above area that you're about to breach and use the AR drone to set marks and watch your teammates get into place. And then your HUD will actually reflect when they're ready to take out their targets. So in the demo that they showed off where you were getting ready to do the extraction piece where you're grabbing the person.
Right.
What they did.
And you see the other three screens with the other guys doing what they're.
Right, right. Well, in my playthrough, I would actually use the AR drone to set my guys up to take out all of the guys on the far perimeter first. So where in the demo, everyone went blazing in and, you know, there were shots being fired everywhere. You can actually use the AR drone to mark those outside four guys. And my team took those four out. Then I raided to the drone was available again to take the pack off to the left. So literally we could just sweep right, which made it a lot easier to, you know, use in the mission. And I used a couple of frag grenades to make it easy to get up on people. Melee attack is very simple to use as well. Instead of them having a separate dedicated button, it's just when you're in close combat, you use the trigger button. So you'll smack them with the butt of your rifle, or if you have a knife in your hand, then you'll cut them or you'll snap their neck. So you're not having to go, okay, this is my gun and this is my melee and this is my gun and this is my melee. Attack is very simple. It's all done with the trigger button. So, you know...
Yeah, but don't you feel like that might be a little... simplifying the matter just a little bit?
No, I think because you have so many other tools that you're using, the fact that you can use the AR drone, that you've got, you know, coordinated kills and things like that, it would be another thing that I would have to remember that I would find myself... Because I find myself a lot of times when I get into a heavy firefight in a game that I'm always trying to shoot, and if I'm out of bullets and I end up, you know, hitting the trigger, I'm like, oh, damn it, I'm not firing. What's my melee button again? So I like the fact that, you know, if I'm out of bullets, hitting that same button will let me continue to attack.
See, I guess I'd have to play the game and have... I didn't get
it,
any...
It actually feels really natural.
Because, I mean, like when I was playing Dragon Age 2, you know, they made more combat gestures instead of, you know, you just setting your markers and the AI beating up whatever you set yourself right to. Now you had to really button mash, like, especially if you were, like, a staff user where you'd be flinging your staff around, which I liked. And, I mean, for a sword user, you know, that would make sense where you're doing a repetitive action. But casting different spells, I felt, should have looked a little different. So right. I don't know if, in this scenario, in a first-person shooter, if I'm going to like knowing that I could be shooting my gun with the same button that would cause me to, you know, shove my beautiful Bowie knife through the neck of another dude. I don't know how comfortable I'd feel with the same gesture.
But you got to remember that the gesture only changes depending upon how close you are to somebody. So, for instance, like, if I end up having somebody that comes from the side over to me, I'm not going to have to remember, okay, B instead of trigger. I just hit trigger, and because they're close to me, I'm going to do a melee attack. Okay. And so it feels a little bit more comfortable,
okay.
I find, which is really cool. For me as a player, because, you know, FPSs aren't my thing. I'm getting into them a little bit more. I'm finding that I enjoy them a little bit more as, you know, I don't have to have, you know, monkey claw in order to actually execute the game. Like, every button is mapped to something, but a lot of times you don't have to necessarily throw everything at a particular scene to actually get through it. The AI is also beefed up. The Ghost team actually does not wait for you to execute a move. So, for instance, when we're running through the city and all the people are trying to get down because they don't want to get shot, you know, I missed my first target. And instead of my Ghost team, like, waiting for me to hit my target and then they move in, they just moved in. And they handled business and basically cleared the way for me.
I think that's going to be a good move moving forward, because I know in a couple of times when I've played, you know, Modern Warfare or anything, say I've missed the ideal guy for everyone to want to move up, you know, where I'm expecting to see some type of cue.
Mm-hmm.
That I'm, you know, and maybe I've missed it, I don't know. But there have been a couple times where I'm like, all right, I think I've killed everything in the area. Why haven't I heard another bit of the conversation? Oh, well, we're really close to our mark. Let's move. And I don't hear it. And they're just sitting there shooting at, you know, random AI that are generating just for them to shoot.
Yeah.
So
that doesn't happen in Ghost Recon. So the team actually functions like a team. And so that's reassuring for me as well, because one thing that I don't like in a game is when I've got these characters that are, you know, are beefy, that are supposed to be really strong, just, you know, standing, waiting on point for something to move, and there's a character in my line of sight, and I've got to take them out. That's always frustrating for me, because I'm like, okay, now I've got to get around to get this person so we can move the story forward. The team itself actually can move the story forward, which is really cool. So,
yeah, but that'd be kind of weird to be the leader of a team that leads itself.
They're all badasses. I mean, that's why they're on Ghost Team. So
now, I know they were showing the like
miniature cloaking ability that it seems that your ghost team has.
Yep, yep.
Is that something that just triggers for certain things, or is that something you have to trigger?
Well, in the places that I played in, it triggered all by itself.
Okay.
But you can trigger it. So it is a thing that you can turn on and turn off as you need it. And then in certain areas, it'll automatically turn on. Like when you're breaching a door, if you're out in public in the air, it will turn on. So as we approached, like in the demo that they showed off, when you approach the room where you're about to do the four-person takedown,
yeah,
my cloaking thing automatically turned itself on with me next to the door, even though there wasn't any other enemies around. But you can actually turn it on or off. It is mappable to the D-pad.
Okay.
In the game.
All right.
So I loved my time with Ghost Recon Future Soldier. I didn't really get to spend any time with the Ghost Recon Online, which is going to be their free-to-play thing that they're dispersing. So they are showing some love to the PC gamers, so you haven't been forgotten and don't feel like you have. But it is going to be something I think that a lot of people aren't giving credit to right this minute. But when you think about it, it's a free-to-play Ghost Recon game. It's going to be available on PC. There are going to be pieces of it that are available for mobile. And it's going to be on on the Wii U.
Yep, it will. I did get some hands-on time.
I think that that's going to be a heck of a thing. And the fact that you'll be able to take your experience stuff with you from space to space. So Ubisoft has already said they're looking at being able to tie in your gameplay where you are to your other place. So, like, you could start your online, your Ghost Recon Online game on your Wii U and then continue it on your PC, picking up your character and your story right where you left off. Something that I think, Valve was trying to accomplish with Portal 2 with the PS3 and being able to get the Steam version and do the multiplayer all over the place. I think that allows you to really take your game along with you wherever you go, really and truly. I think that's going to be something pretty powerful, especially for the PC user, to be able to pick up and play that, you know, on any machine at any point in time will be pretty cool. So I was really impressed with both Modern Warfare 3 and Ghost Recon, but I got to say that I'm looking forward to picking up both. I probably won't pick up online just because I don't think the PC that I have can really run it. And I'm not a PC gamer. Like, ASWD is not for me. I'm a controller kind of girl. But those were really good experiences for me. And, you know, in coming out of my bubble, I was really surprised that I had as much fun playing that as I did.
Cool.
So, those were kind of big for me this year. And I know that one thing that was big for the whole team, because we couldn't stop talking about it, and you and Ham and KBD actually finally got some time with it, was the Wii U, which we got to talk about. If you thought we weren't going to talk about it, guess what? You were wrong, because, you know, this is Pandalicious. Like to hear it. Here it go.
Well, yeah, so me, KBD, and Hamsterman all woke up on last day, and we're like, you know what? We are getting in this line. We are hoofing this out. Well,
first talk about the line, because we were at the briefing, and the moment that they showed the controller, like, the entire audience was
not even when they showed the controller. When they showed the capability of the controller, I think that's when people went, "Oh shit!" So I don't know if you guys have seen it yet, but pretty much in my mind, I always think about it as the Wii tablet,
the Wii Touch,
because it does look like a tablet. It is, you know, it takes both your hands to hold, not like a
It takes remote. Two hands to hold the Wii controller.
Yeah, the Wii U controller. It does have a screen on it, and
touchscreen.
Yep, it is touchscreen.
6.9-inch touchscreen.
But keep in mind that this is not planned to be a mobile gaming device.
They stressed that a few times.
Because I mean, they did show footage of you playing your Zelda game on your TV, and a parent or something saying, "Hey, our show's on. We're supposed to watch that." Oh, okay, and then being able to turn your TV back onto its normal settings with your Wii U still on and still be able to play it in your
on your controller.
So, I mean, and I did have questions about that. So, literally, as soon as that was announced, people just rushed to get in this line. And literally, there was a separate line to play the experiences for the Wii U, or just to go into their booth and play their games on the regular 3DS and the Wii. So, I mean, there was two separate lines, and literally you could come in and out if you were just going to play anything else, but if you wanted that Wii U, you had to stand in line. I know Hamster Man went day two, the day that it opened, yep. and I think doors opened at 10, and he got in the line at a 10:45, and they told him that they had to shut down the line, the dude right in front of him, because with all the people in the line, it was going to take 8 hours to clear. So essentially, it would take the whole day.
Yeah, it was the main destination. I have to say, you know, we talk every year when we go to E3, and we always say, okay, so who won the media briefing contest? And absolutely, that goes to Nintendo.
And it's really funny, because a lot of people don't think that Nintendo really should win this. And, I mean, I think they're looking at it from the standpoint of that there really aren't any new games. But, I mean, we're looking at a franchise that has been able to...
Wait, what do you mean there really aren't any new games? Like, are you talking about, like, for the Wii U, or are you talking about new games?
Because, like, new original stories, new stories, like, new games.
Well, you can say that about everybody, though.
That's right, which is my point. But not to mention, if you look at Nintendo, Nintendo's had a track history, a very good history of all of their mainstream
their
games.
Franchises make money. That's, and their
so
franchises
why, so why
good.
Rock the boat?
Exactly. So why fuck it up?
Right.
You're gonna buy the Zelda game. Why do anything other than Zelda as far as an action game?
Right. But that's my point. But people had something to bitch that there was nothing new on the console. And the fact that they're just redefining and remastering their old games. Don't get me wrong.
Okay, so what was good? What was new for Microsoft?
Nothing.
What was new for Sony?
I didn't go. So, was there anything new from Sony?
No. It was all the same franchises. Okay, so they announced the PSP... The
Vita. Don't forget your vitamin.
Yeah, they announced the PS Vita. Okay, and the first game that they show off for it is an Uncharted game. Okay? It's just a new imagining of an existing franchise. Okay?
Right.
You've got the...
if it ain't broke,
Street
don't
Fighter
try to
versus
fix
Tekken...
It.
Okay, well, those are existing franchises. We're just mashing the two together, okay?
You have to admit, that's a pretty good mashup.
It's a damn good mashup, okay? I might freaking buy one for it.
I know, I've already decided that I'm going to be getting a 3DS.
But if your bitch and moan piece thing is, oh, they didn't come up with any new IPs, there's no new stories. Tell me what new IP or new story came out for Microsoft. Because you had Dance Central 2, Gears 3,
Catherine.
Halo 4.
Catherine.
But Catherine's not a Microsoft only.
I know. It's for everybody.
Okay, Catherine's on everyone, and that's, you know, a new IP.
I think that's the most innovative thing.
Like, if you want to talk about just new IPs, then we need to talk, you know, developers.
We need to talk
developer.
About Hitman Absolution, because that's on a totally different engine. That's developed in-house. So
right.
Catherine.
It's a new engine,
in-house.
But Hitman Absolution is a part of an existing franchise.
I know.
Okay,
yeah.
If we're just talking straight up new IPs, then really the only thing that we can talk about is the Indiecade.
Yeah.
Which, guess what? They're never getting a media briefing. Because
I know,
they're indie and they're small.
They're fantastic
and they come up with some great games.
Right.
But if you're bitching, moan, and contestant thing about Nintendo not deserving the media briefing, you know, who won the media briefing wars is they didn't have anything new as far as...
I know, but I'm just saying what... The
right, and I'm just saying that those
about.
People are full of shit.
Yeah, so everyone's full of shit because everyone was just like, oh, Nintendo isn't doing anything revolutionary.
Guess what? Well,
Believe it or not,
you can't say they're not doing anything
revolutionary. No, because a lot of people are like, oh, haven't we seen something like this before?
Like with a controller that tracks with the screen built in?
People, I think someone's been talking about different... I think they tried to do that with a different console a while ago, and it didn't do what the Wii is doing.
Which console?
I don't know. People were talking
about it.
Okay,
because the only thing that comes close to what the Wii U controller
is doing... Like a really small... I think I
was... Is the Dreamcast.
Yes.
Okay?
Yeah.
And the Dreamcast one didn't track, okay? It just allowed... Because I had the Dreamcast, and I had the VU box that you could put in.
Yeah,
the
that's what they were talking about, was the Dreamcast.
Okay? Where you would have some interaction things that would happen on your control if you had the VU... controller memory unit as opposed to just the regular controller unit, which just again goes to show just how in front and how far into the future thinking the
Dreamcast
was because
really.
That's a decade ago that it came out that it did that, but it didn't do what Nintendo's doing, and I think that to make a comparison between the two is a little bit unfair just because the mechanics were different. Okay, we're not talking about just being able to show a piece of the game that you're playing from the screen on the controller, like a map piece. Like, if you just want to compare that, like, oh yeah, so I'm in a game and I see the overhead map in the screen in my controller to the area that's on the screen. Correct. That's nothing new, because that's been done before, okay, with the Dreamcast. But what Nintendo is doing, which is going to be revolutionary, and I think people need to give credit where credit is due, is that you've got the motion tracking piece of it. You know, when they're showing the catch game going on, and you're actually moving the controller with two hands to actually catch the game.
Right, yes.
Or that the controller's on the ground because your ball for the golf game is there.
Yeah.
And you're swinging against it.
See, I'm really surprised that they didn't make that part of the Wii U experience, because they did have several things lined up.
Because it's probably not working yet.
Right. But let me talk about the experiences that I did have with it. So right. going through the line, literally that last day, there was a running of the bulls. Like, literally, and believe it or not, we were told that there would be no running because they had to scan every badge. But literally, as soon as your badge was scanned, people just ran. Like, it was really like, get out of my way or I will hurt you. And, I mean, we got in the line, and literally, I was probably only in the line for about 45 minutes. Because it went by fast. They really only wanted people to have, you know, about a 30-minute experience.
Right.
So you got to play through 3 10-minute demos, pretty much. But me and Hamsman being really fortunate and learning to talk to everybody,
mm-hmm.
you know, turned that 30-minute experience into an hour 15. So
yeah, extra time bonus.
Yeah, exactly. We hit a time to... a sand hourglass that slowed down some time.
You use the sands of time.
We were the tomorrow people. Oh, what an old reference that is.
Wow.
I can't believe I just
went
there.
You went there.
I went there.
Wow.
but they actually did have Ghost Recon as part of the Wii U experience, where you could go and see that. I know Hamster Man jumped over there for a minute. I didn't. They had this one demo, and all these demos were not necessarily games, but just to give you an idea of what the Wii U could
theoretically do. Right, right. In the media briefing, they were like, look, we don't have any games, but we have experiences. And basically, there are things to show you what some of the capabilities could be.
Could potentially be moving forward in a game.
Yeah, and Nintendo really seemed interested in getting feedback from people.
Oh, yeah. After every experience, whoever was running the screen was like, do you have any feedback? Because at the end of the day, literally, everyone was like, at the end of the day, they're going to ask me. They're going to ask me. So make it really good. and literally, like, right before you even got to do the experiences, they had Booth Babes who had them tethered.
Yeah, Booth Babes were making a big comeback this year.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
I specifically, like, avoided taking shots with Booth Babes in them.
You can, yeah.
Because they were everywhere.
But believe it or not, I think that the ratio between Booth Babe and Booth Babe who plays video games is shifting. And I think they're looking for girls who know what they're talking about.
Which is cool. I'm very glad to see
I'm very glad to see that happen too. So,
because I have no problem with you being sexy.
Oh, yeah.
As long as you're sexy and a gamer, I'm down.
Yeah. Yeah,
I will ogle you just like everyone else.
I'm down like a fireman on a fire hose.
Or a pole. Fire pole.
Fire pole.
Yeah, if a fireman's going down on a fire hose...
It's full of water, and he's from the 80s, because there's so much power in the fire hose from the 80s movies. Whoa! So, but yeah.
Yeah, you get less sugar.
But some of the other experiences outside of the Ghost Recon, because they were showing you could play it. Mm-hmm. And see the overhead and see what was going on with that.
Right.
They did have another experience, Measure Up, where you pretty much are you're measuring your awareness for things. So like it was pretty much like a drawing sim, and it was like draw a 1-inch line. So it's like okay, and you could do it 1-on-1, or you could do it with somebody. So me and Hamsterman jumped on that together. He won me by like a couple of points, but there was one where you had to draw a 35-degree angle from memory. Because, mind you, they don't give you any prompts. These are just, so you know, and I'm like, okay. And, of course, I was player one, so I was like, all right, well, I know 90 is this. Half of that is 45. So I'm like, we'll just shave a little bit off of here. You know, and Hansel was like, I got this. And, you know, I'm like, oh, great. Because, I mean, I know he was... that he does stuff like that, like he can do some type of draw. So I'm like, fuck, I'm totally gonna get screwed in this. And I was actually, I think I was like at 39, so I was actually pretty close. And they had asked us after that what our feedback was for it. And I'm like, well, for someone who might use this as possibly like a learning, like I could see this being like a learning game for like children to become aware of, you know, angles,
spatial and, relations, yeah, and stuff like that, right?
I could see, you know, if they're not getting the hang of it, like, you know, having different modes of difficulty.
Almost being like a tutor type program at
like,
home.
Well, you know, like if you're young and you're just learning, it's like, all right, well, you know, look at this box.
Right.
Half of this box is a 90-degree angle. And give them visual prompts, because you remember there are so many different learning styles and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, but that would be something really fun, because not to mention if you wanted ever wanted to get into type of drawing.
Right.
This would, but also,
that would
be a
also
tool
help
with
definitely
that.
With math and science skills.
Exactly.
So, yeah, so that could be very, very...
We brought that up. I did talk to a guy from Nintendo Corporate after this particular thing, and I had also mentioned that up, because they do give you those small... analog sticks on it on both sides.
The Wii controller has dual analog sticks on both sides
and,
of the controller.
And me and Hamster Man were both noticing during one of the demos, Catch Me, where literally you play either Toadstool or Mario, and a little like childlike Mario, and you have to run around this grid, and they have to catch you. So if you're Mario, they have to catch you, and if you're a Toadstool, you have to try to catch Mario, and you only have a certain amount of time to do that. Demonstration allowed you to see an overhead map and be running at the same time. So you could see both sides of, if you were Mario, you got to see the whole overview of the screen.
Right.
But if you weren't, you know, if you were just a Toadstool, you just had your Wii control, your Wiimote, and the big screen to look at.
Right.
But we were noticing when we both played Mario, because they allowed you to play both sides of the experience, that our fingers were slipping off of the analog sticks, which could, you know, potentially lead to a game loss.
Right.
Because I know on the nunchucks and whatnot, they give you that little bit of that grip.
Right, the circular
the texture.
Divot.
Mm-hmm. You know, and they gave you a divot inside of the, but it was all the same smooth texture.
Right.
So your you know, if you were sweating because you were playing hard, you know, your fingers would slip a lot. So I had mentioned to this particular guy, I believe his name was Bill, and I was like, you know, I'd like to see, you know, maybe put some type of texture difference inside that divot that would allow us to hold on to those analog sticks.
Mm-hmm.
If you're going to analyze, and he's like, you know, he's like, you're probably the second person who's brought that up. I'm like, I'm not trying to knock you, because I think this thing is really awesome regardless, but I'm moving forward for someone, if you really want them to have the type of gameplay, you know, with these hardcore titles that may possibly come, you might want to work
on
that.
And let's talk about that right now, because it's not even about hardcore titles that may actually come.
No,
okay?
They are hard to...
They're coming. They talked to Levine from Irrational Games. There's going to be a BioShock experience on the Wii U. I think that's the biggest thing to walk away from with Nintendo's briefing, and why I say that they're winning, because literally the week before we went to E3, I said if they're going to do anything with this console and it's going to be any kind of big deal to us, they've got to reach out to the casual gamer, and they've got to reach out to the hardcore gamer.
I think that with their lineup they were showing that, I think they've hit it.
I say that they won, because it seems to me that they were the one that listened to their community the most and went, okay, we get it. All right, we did this and it works really cool for the kids, but you want something for you too. And I think that's really what the U and the Wii U is we get it. We get you,
at the
hardcore
Wii U,
gamers.
When they mentioned the Wii U, Bono and U2 didn't come out and like sing, you know, like a, you, we're U2 and this is the Wii U. And, you know, that'd be pretty funny, but I know they wouldn't have done that.
But do you know how much Bono and the Edge charge for an appearance?
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
Anyway, so I mean, but they did give us that idea in the Miu. The Chase U. Then they had the Battle Me, the Chase Me and the Battle Me. And I got trumped in almost all these experiences except for the last one, which I'm going to talk about, which is my favorite. And it was called Shield Pose.
Okay.
From the briefing, if you had a chance to see it at all, pretty much they show a pirate and these ghost pirates that shoot arrows at you, and you literally have to, in rhythm, deflect the arrows
by moving.
You gotta catch them, and then you have to get them off your screen. When they first show it to you on the screen, you didn't realize that there was actually a melody, so it was a rhythm pattern game. So, I mean, and that probably, that and the Ghost Recon had the longest lines.
Okay.
But we sat through that, and while I'm sitting there watching, I'm like, and everyone's kind of fumbling with it, and I'm like, do they not hear? Because I'm like, there's a
song there. Uh-huh.
There's a song there. So I'm sitting there, and I'm like, down. And I know you guys can't see me, but I can still remember the pattern. And I'm like, and no one was really catching it. So there, you know, it was monitoring your accuracy, your rhythm, your enthusiasm.
Uh-huh.
You know, and they were tracking all that. And I'm like, obviously, these are all things that you would look for in a rhythm.
Correct.
You need to be accurate on the beat. You need to be able, you need to be, in, you know, so it made sense. So I was like, oh, I'm totally going to rock this. Because Hamster Man, as much as, you know, I totally dig you, man. I got more rhythm than you. And,
I should hope. So,
and literally when I got up there, you know, the guy's like, he's like, I saw you nodding your head. And I'm like, yep. He goes, so I don't even need to tell you what. I'm like, nope, just let me do my thing. And literally I did. And that morning, I think I had the highest. I had all A's in all of them. And literally when I came off of it, people were just, I didn't realize people were watching me for one thing. So I was just like, yeah. And I mean, I had this big smile on my face. Like,
you were doing the goofy, happy panda thing.
I totally did. And I know that big booming camera came in and stopped.
Aww.
So I'm sure it probably got my I fucking
your
love coloring face. I'm sure of it. And, like, literally, like I said, as soon as I was done, people all around were, like, they literally were watching me. And, like, they saw all the A's come up. And literally the demo guy's like, I don't even get all A's. And I'm like, he's like, and I'm here, I've been demoing this for the last 3 days. And I'm just like, I like rhythm games. And I mean, but that was probably my best experience. And believe it or not, with that, you know, the controller, when you're moving around with it, you know, it takes over your, I don't want to say your actuality or your reality.
Field of vision?
But yes, it follows the game. So I think it's an easy way to immerse yourself without you having to take over a living room, which is what I think their goal was.
Right.
You know, and I mean, I kept asking the important question because I know they didn't say exactly, you know, I know they said that this is not a mobile unit, so obviously this is not something that you could take out
right.
of your
no,
car.
Right, no, controller is going to talk to your network.
Yeah.
And so it's only going to be able to receive information from your Wii when it's on the network and it's near your
yeah.
Wii console.
So I wonder, like, I did ask, was like, you know, do they have any idea of how far away you could be from your system and still transfer that information.
Well, if you're dealing with a network, then you're dealing with, you know, within 100 feet.
Yeah, probably. But they did not give specifics.
Because I don't think the sucker's going to be Bluetooth.
They wouldn't, and I asked.
Because that would be a lot of data to try and push over Bluetooth.
I tried so many roundabout ways to try to see if anyone could give me an answer. And they were like, they really haven't given us any information on that. So it's not that, it might not be something that they're thinking about right now, but that doesn't mean, because with this hardware,
they're not going to make the Wii U controller something you can take on the go. They already have a mobile gaming
yes,
device.
Yes, I know.
They have a 3DS. They're not going to make another one to compete with it.
I know.
So if anybody's thinking that the controller's going to be that, it's not.
So, anyway, but I mean, I thoroughly enjoyed the experience. They've already announced a couple of titles that will come to the Wii U, which I'm looking forward to seeing. If there's anything that the Nintendo experience has ingrained in my subcranium.
Subcranium?
Is my, yep, and my cranium. Like my sub and my dur cranium. And I know those aren't real words. But in my mind they are.
All right. I'm not fighting it.
That now, I was really opposed to the 3DS when it first came out. I really was. Because in my mind, if you're going to add a feature like 3D in your games, for it to really hone in with me, you have to make it essential for your gameplay. Like, I don't want you to say, oh, by the way, if you flip it upside down, you can be a bat. Like, no, it doesn't work for me. It really doesn't. I don't like the idea of, oh, yeah, well, you can play this in 3D, but it's not essential to your gameplay. I'm like, I'm not spending that additional money for, if I feel like it, it's going to be 3D. I want there to be exclusive titles that require, they
See,
have to
that's,
require
that's
it.
That's where you and I differ, because I don't think 3D is anything, and I've said this
yes,
before.
Yes, I know, which is, I know.
And so that's the only quality about the 3DS that I even liked, was the fact that I could opt whether or not
See,
to have the 3D.
I don't know, because
if you forced me and you said, oh, you can play Rhythm Heaven on the 3DS, but it's 3D only, I would never buy Rhythm Heaven again. I wouldn't play it.
They're making another one. They did have some.
Yeah, I know.
They did have some of it on the
on It
the
was
floor.
On my list for the rhythm stuff.
It's just
it's just
my thing. If you're going to say that this is your selling point, then for one, I think you need to make exclusive titles.
Right,
that
but they've
got to
be killer
it.
But they've got to
be killer
titles.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
But I'm just, so I mean, in my mind, when the 3DS came out, and I was like, oh my god, it's going to be 3D, I was expecting all of them
to but and the then augmented they made reality stuff kind of sold you on it. Like the Kid Icarus stuff with the battle cards, I was like, oh, hell no.
No, believe it or not, I'm not even turned on to that. I'm not. Which is really surprising, especially coming from me. Especially coming, no.
What about really the Pokedex thing?
But I like Pokemon, but I've never filled my Pokedex, so that doesn't even, that's not even a selling point
then
for
what
me.
Is it? What is it? Because I know what you're going to say. So, what
are
what
you sure
it?
You know?
Yeah, you want a 3DS now.
Yeah, I do.
See?
I do want a 3DS
but
now.
What did it for you then?
Believe it or not, it's going to be really funny when I say it. Well, actually, no, not really, because if you
don't
know
say,
me.
Don't say Street Team, because I'll die.
No. But at the same time, that could be a really funny game when you're bored.
So then what did it?
It's the Res titles. It's the Resident Evil titles.
Oh my god.
I played some Revelation, and I really kind of dug that. I'm really not all that big in Mercenaries, to be 100%, because one, I already have it, Mercenaries 4, my Xbox and my PS3.
Right.
So that's not the seller. But Revelations is. Really, that and the Kirby game. And
are you doing the stupid silly panda face again?
Because I was watching little snippets of it, and I was talking to Hamster Man because he's more Nintendo than I've ever been.
Yeah.
So I think it was great that he was next to me during this experience because I'm like, you know, let me get some Nintendo nerd on right now because I'm sitting next to a giant, you know,
Nintendo
archive of it. Let me
like
you
he
know.
Is a walking Nintendo Wikipedia.
Yeah. So I was just like, so as we're watching this Kirby on the for the DS or 3DS. I'm like, so wait a minute, you're a Kirby, and then when you get so many points, you get another Kirby? Because at one point, you could have, like, multiple Kirbys. And I'm just like, that's really cute, but why? I don't get it. My brain hurts. But it's so cute, so I'm gonna watch it. You know, he was just like, yeah. And then he was talking to me about the other Kirby game. And I've always liked Kirby. Like, I always thought it was a very cute character. And I always played it, you know, played Kirby in Smash. I wasn't very good at it, but I still played it.
Right.
But just being in there really kind of honed it in. Not to mention, like I said, the Res title really got me. Chris gets way too much play. Chris Redfield from the Resident Evil. He does. There are so many other characters that they could totally go and highlight, and they don't. And, you know, I really, really would like to take a break from the Chris Redfield train, and who knows, you know, we've got so many others that we could implement, and they don't. But the Street Pass thing probably really got me, too.
Because everybody,
you know, especially for the Nintendo, because, I mean, I saw a couple of chicks, you know, who were walking around in the Nintendo booth, and, like, they're like, oh, we're Nintendo now. So they took their DSs and their DS lights because one girl had a pink DS light. And she's like, oh, we're in the wrong place. So they put that in their bags and they each pulled out a teal. I was like, so these bitches are rocking multiple DSs. I'm like, now that's indulgence. That's indulgence.
Yeah,
right
no,
there.
I don't need more than one DS.
No.
I will.
No, but I mean, for the stuff that the 3DS will do that inspires community, and I'm really big in community, believe it or not, and I do like that aspect. So, I mean, if the Res titles weren't there and I didn't see people having so much fun with the Street Pass, then I would just look at it the way that I was looking at it a week ago. But now there are so many things that are coming to this DS, this 3DS, that I think I need to jump on this train. And I know I'm going to walk into my GameStop and regret running my debit card. Like, the minute I take it out, I'm going to be like, I don't know.
Well, it won't be too bad because you've got the nice rewards card. So if you trade in your DSi,
it'll hurt a little less. I think I might just do it.
Because you don't need both.
Because your 3DS is a 3DSi, is a DSi plus 3D.
Exactly. So you don't need both.
I know. But I've always been, I feel like I'm cheating on my DSi. Like, I didn't take it out at all during this trip, and I was planning
to. Have in a freaking steel case my Game Boy SP that looks like an old school Nintendo.
I was tempted to take it out because I'm like, oh man, I'm gonna be around so many people who, you know, who have their DSs with them, and then everyone's like, oh, I have some friends, and I'm like, and everyone was pulling up. It's like, I don't have one. Literally,
oh my god, you were having Street Pass envy.
I was, and believe it or not, at the Nintendo booth, a lot of the corporate Nintendo all had QR codes.
Yeah, so you could
scan them, you would pull up, you would grab their Miis. So, you know, and the bill being awesome was just like, you don't have one? I'm like, no, but I don't have one. I only have a DS. I don't have a... And then Hamster Man's like, I've got one. I'm like, fuck you, Hamster Man.
Oh my god.
So, but everyone who seems to be anyone had it with them.
Oh my god.
So, I was like, oh, I got it. No, I don't have a 3DS. I can't integrate things. I can't alter my reality. I can't augment it, you bastards. And I don't want to hear about how you just turned, you know, the Staples Center into a donut. Like, I don't need to know that. Thanks. But
it's a pretty big donut, though.
It was a pretty big donut, but it did. I think they've shown me Star Fox.
Yeah,
on there, and Star Fox was a big seller for. I was like, oh god. Because, you know, Nintendo's really smart. They'll leave you snippets of what they might plan to release. You're like, they're bringing up a lot of Star Fox. And then all of a sudden, boom, there's some... I'm like, oh, you bitches. You bitches have been reading my diary. And how I've been like, I brought Star Fox.
Today is another day that I wish I could play Star Fox 64. But I can't because I don't have a Nintendo 64. Oh, Nintendo, when will you fix the sorrow in my heart?
I love you. I miss you.
In a question mark block.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, they've been reading my diary, and they brought it
back. I told you you should put a better password on that thing.
You know, I thought 1234 was essential, but apparently people figure it out.
Yep.
But that was my experience with Nintendo. So I spent a lot of time with them. I also spent a lot of time with Square Enix.
Square Enix!
Yeah.
Who? Tomb Raider!
Oh my god, Pandalicious at Square Enix? Who knew?
Yeah, I know. Surprise!
Like, literally, they should have just rolled out an inflatable mattress for me to take power naps.
Alright, so I'm gonna say this right now. I told you so.
You did.
Okay? And I want you to say that a little bit louder.
You did.
And who was right?
You were right.
Go ahead and talk about Tomb Raider now.
Alright, so when they first were showing the trailer... For this new Tomb Raider game, I was kind of like, you know what? I was kind of sick of Lara Croft after the Guardians of...
Yeah, whatever.
Yeah. I was like, yeah, I'm done.
Yeah, I didn't play Guardians.
I'm done because I have a hard time believing in a rich, really overly attractive, overly super endowed woman who could take things out, Kimbo, you know, Akimbo Assassin style.
Assassin.
Yeah. I was done with the acrobats in the gym because no rich bitch does gymnastics because she's got a maid who does it for her. You know,
maybe she's been taking Tai Bo.
No,
you know, that's just empowering.
So what they've now gone and done is I think they're pretty much restarting, or it's like a prequel. So we're gonna see Lara become.
You're gonna see Lara.
Lara Croft. We're going to see Lara Croft before
she was a badass.
Before she was a badass. So we're going to see her on the precipice of her change into the badass. Yeah,
she's like, what, 17, 18?
No. I think she's 21. She's, okay. Because, yeah, even though rich parents often send their kids off to different countries at the age of 16. Or in Pokemon at 10.
Yeah.
So.
Go on. You're a man now. Mazel tov. Into the world.
In the year of Pokemon, she's about 11 years behind.
Okay.
But she's 21, and she's looking for adventure. And literally, adventure smacked her in the face and said, here I am. And she's pretty much what you see is you see her on this bunker, and she's traveling, and it's bad. It's bad on the water. So, you know, I think she was on a Titanic, but they don't let us say the name. And literally, this ship cracks in half, and she's on, you know, she's about to die, and you see this random sandy Santa Claus-looking dude, buff as hell, like, help her get up, and, you know, is magically on the other side of this boat. So, it's really weird, because if you watch the trailer, she's in that thing, it fills up with water, she starts to drown, she gets pulled out, and when she pans to it, she sees the dude on the other side of the fucking ship. So, either somebody else helped her get out, and she just saw that dude, or that dude is like Speedy Gonzalez, helped her up, and then booked it. And I actually think that would make much more sense. And you see her deciding if she's going to go down with the ship or make the chance, make the jump, or attempt to make the jump and try to survive. And she actually lands the jump, gets him, and it's downpour rain. She slips from his hand, and she falls into the ocean. And the part of the ship that makes it to land, you know, is beached on this island that she knows nothing about. She's injured, she's battered, and she's like, holy fuck, what am I going to do? And she has to decide if she's going to try to survive and figure out where she is, or if she's going to get taken by that. And you pretty much see, I think in text, a survivor is born. So we see where that drive and that sense of survival comes from her.
Okay.
To learn how to adapt to her surroundings and make it through really dangerous shit, which now gives her so much more credibility than jumping into the game where she's
rich. Adds more depth
to her character.
Is.
So she's not just a hot bitch who can shoot guns and do,
aerial she's not just a hot bitch who has lost her parents.
Oh, boo-hoo. Go to Disney. Everybody loses parents. That is not enough these days. If you've got both of your parents, you are a lucky son of a bitch because you will never encounter any of these stories. Because losing a parent is part of the transformation. You need that loss. If you've never lost a thing in your life, you will never have these type of adventures.
I lost my E3 badge.
I know. See? You've had loss. And you had a great adventure.
I had an adventure.
So, I mean, so you see that with her. In the gameplay that they saw, you see her trying to go through this cavern. Because she's trying to figure out what the fuck she needs to do. And while she's, trying to piece all the puzzles together in the platforming sense, she's being pursued by this dude in a loincloth thing, like an inhabitant of the area, who randomly...
Tarzan?
Kind of like a grungy... Like a grungy Tarzan-ish, type of guy. And I think he tends to go after her when she's, like, crawling through stuff. So, like, he's pursuing her, and she's, like, trying to defend him and trying to figure her way out of this cavern. And, I mean, you see her character slowly and slowly coming into shape, which for people who weren't a big lover of the franchise...
Like Candelicious.
Like me. Give her some newfound respect. And I think Square Enix is really going to turn my opinion around on that. I don't remember who they picked up to do it. The reboot and the remaster, but I know Square Enix is distributing it, but I don't think they developed it. I think another team.
Was it Crystal Dynamics?
I think it was Crystal Dynamics.
Yeah, that was.
So I'm in shock already from the little bit that I've seen. I didn't get to sit behind doors with it. Like I was hoping. I really should have snagged that opportunity when I had the chance and I didn't, but.
Bad Panda. When one door opens, Panda enters.
Yeah. And they don't have windows in those because people would jump through the windows. But it looked really good. I'm actually really curious about it. I already know I'm a big Square Enix fan, so yep. they've got me on board to give it a shot, which for me, giving Tomb Raider shots a pretty big deal.
Yeah. So I mean, dudes and dudettes and those who have yet to make up their minds. We have only scratched the surface of the stuff that we saw at E3 this year. There's going to be so much on our website.
I know, I still haven't even talked about Mayhem Solution or Dead Island or Final Fantasy 13-2, which, surprisingly enough, ladies and gentlemen, I think might fix the boo-boo.
Oh! 13-1. Okay, I haven't talked about Assassin's Creed Revelations. Or the Raving Rabbids game, or Far Cry 3, which I got to see.
Oh my god, we just have so much stuff that we can't pack into an hour.
So, you've got to hit us up on our website, www.electricsisterhood.com, or you can use our short address, which is...
ESH.co, that is ESH.co, the shortest will bounce to the long one. Check out the articles that are written within the week. Any questions and comments, go to mailbag@landofesh.com. We are available on iTunes for free. Subscribe, leave a review/comment, please. Thank you.
That's right. You can get our podcast the moment we put them out on the web for consumption by subscribing in iTunes. Simply go to the music store and look for Electric Sisterhood and click that beautiful little subscribe button.
Clicky.
Or
it's that simple.
Or you can look for us in the Zune Marketplace as well. Again, searching for Electric Sisterhood, you can find us easily and subscribe and get the hot newness the moment we put it out on the web. But if you don't want to do that,
You can plug us into any RSS reader or any podcast search engine. But if you're looking for us, you might want to stop by any of the other sites that fly underneath our banner.
That's right. There's so much going on in the land of Esh. We put out brand new shows on Monday, and you can check out our website as well. You can go and visit our friends over at Boston Bass Brigade by going to their website and checking out their podcast as well, which is hosted by King Baby Duck. You can visit Geek Aggro at their website and listen to their podcast, which we highly recommend, which is hosted by Deuces Wild, as well as visit with some of our friends that, you know, are not necessarily in the land of Esh, but, you know, could be. We just don't know. So we're going to say, as far as shout-outs go, definitely check out Dead Pixel Live. We love those guys. XBLA fans are also pretty cool. Gamer Reaction is down for the cause, which we love. So make sure that you're checking those things out, as well as interact with us on our Facebook page, which is at facebook.com/landofesh. You can check out our magazine, which we have a new issue getting ready to hit the stands, which I highly recommend that you check out because it has a feature on something I'll be talking about pretty shortly, which is Rage from Bethesda. And, you know, there might be a Skyrim thing.
Bethesda, I love you! Thank you for being so nice to me.
There's all kinds of stuff. You can follow us on Twitter, which I highly recommend because we are some funny, funny people. To see the entire group that makes up the Land of Esh, simply go to twitter.com/NinjaSista and check out the Land of Esh list. Everyone who's anyone is on that list. I say follow them all. Kind of like a Pokemon. You got to catch them all. So let's see. That's pretty much our show for this week. I got to say, as far as the shit that I'm digging this week, dude, it's Ubisoft. I fucking love Assassin's Creed. I'm still running through and finishing off Rome, but I fucking love Ubisoft and gamers. Panda, what's the shit you're digging this week?
Atlas, Catherine. Oh my god, must own, must own, must own, must own, must own.
I wonder if she likes Catherine.
Must own.
So as always, I am Ninja Sister.
And I'm Pandalicious.
And we are out of here, people.
Bye.
Peace.